When the Chicago Cubs won the World Series last fall, it marked a dramatic change in fortunes for one of the most notorious hard luck teams in all of baseball, and the end of one of the most storied jinxes in all of professional sports. In the new book, The Chicago Cubs: Story of a Curse, Rich Cohen takes on a journey through Cubs history from the team's earliest days as one of the premier clubs of the dead ball era to the final out of the 2016 season when they were finally crowned world champions. Rich Cohen is an author of the New York Times bestseller Monsters, Sweet and Low, and When I Stop Talking, You'll Know I'm Dead. Again, the new book is The Chicago Cubs: Story of a Curse, and we welcome Rich Cohen to the roundtable this morning. Rich, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
At what point did you know you had a book?
I think I had a book since I was 10 years old and I saw the Cubs collapse to the Cincinnati Reds. What I didn't have is an ending. You know, I've been writing a version of this story my whole life, really, but it was sort of like a road that just went to infinity. There was no finish to the trip. It was like, that's what being a Cubs fan is like, going and going and never getting there. And after last season, after winning the World Series, you suddenly had a finish to the trip and you could sort of understand the whole shape of the story, which to me is like the whole story of pro sports in this country is the Cubs.
So the subtitle is Story of a Curse. So talk about the story you wanted to tell.
Well, it's almost like a bad idea playing out through time, this idea of the curse. And, you know, it's the famous curse of the Billy Goat that the tavern owner of the Billy Goat Tavern put on the Cubs when Phil Wrigley kicked him and his goat out of Wrigley Field in 1945 at the World Series. And he said the Cubs will never win again until the right thing is done by the goat. But the goat died, so the right thing never could be done. And you go back and you look at it, you realize that the curse is not real. I don't believe they're actually metaphysically cursed, but it becomes real because it becomes the culture of the team that somebody has to fix, and that every time anything goes wrong, everybody has that feeling like you have when you're in a house that you heard is haunted. Everyone's kind of scared and everything falls apart. So for me, the curse is sort of the culture of the Cubs that made losing seem not only normal but righteous and good.
So that idea, the fact that they kept on losing for so many years, is there reason? Is there rationale? Is there anything behind that other than whatever is good or bad luck?
Well, if you look at it, you know, I did this story for Harper's Magazine a long time ago. I traveled with the Cubs and tried to figure out why they couldn't win. That was in 2001. And I sat down with the general manager, and he said, and it kind of opened my eyes, that the problem was Wrigley Field, which, you know, is that's a horrible thing to say because Wrigley Field's like the holy temple in Jerusalem, man. That's the place. And he sort of, you know, the famous thing is that, well, it's so beautiful that it fills up. There's no incentive to win because people come either way. But the fact is, if you know baseball, Wrigley Field's a schizophrenic baseball park. It has two different personalities, one when the wind is blowing in and one is when the wind is blowing out. And he said it was impossible to build a winning team in Wrigley Field. And he had the statistics to prove it. It'd have to be almost two teams in one, a pitcher's team and a hitter's team. And I wrote this up ultimately in the Wall Street Journal, and I suggested in a moment of complete, you know, panic as a Cubs fan, that they actually tear down Wrigley Field and salt the fields where it had stood so nothing will grow there again. And probably the most controversial thing I've ever written. But Obviously Wrigley Field still stands, but they did renovate it. And one of the things they did in the renovation is put up these huge scoreboards that sort of act as buffers that knock down the wind. It's much less schizophrenic than it used to be. And I think that's part of it. Another thing is, you know, the day games. They only play day games. And the thought was, well, the players are out of sync with the rest of the league. And also they're tired because they play all summer, you know, and the sun's beating down on them and it's 20 degrees hotter. And that's probably true. But the other big thing is the day games allowed them a lot of free time at night. And they use that free time, allowed them to go out drinking. So that was a disadvantage to being a Cub, too. And then just the general culture where the expectations were, if we finish 500, it's a pretty good year. And usually what people expect, other people will deliver on, and that just became the culture of the Cubs. And if you watched them, you saw the moment things started to go wrong, they all had the same look on their face, which is always, oh, my God, the curse is real.
Mm. This book is very much the story of the curse, but it's also your story. You talk about your lifetime as being a Cub fan and this long journey you've been on as well.
Yeah, well, my father's from New York, and he's a Yankees fan. and he moved to Chicago before I was born. And after seeing a Cubs game, he turned to me one day in the car on the way home from Wrigley Field and said, I want you to make me a promise. I want you to promise me you will never be a Cubs fan. And I said, why? He said, because a Cubs fan will have a bad life. A Cubs fan expects to lose. A Cubs fan thinks all human endeavor will end in loss, will have lower expectations, and will suffer. And, of course, being a kid, that made me decide to become, like, the biggest Cubs fan of all time. And he was right. I mean, I think about it all the time. He was right, but he missed all the glorious stuff about being a Cubs fan, which is, I said, a Cubs fan, up until last year, knew there was going to be no October. So we know how to really appreciate just an average, everyday game in August. Cubs fans were the Buddhists of the national game. We lived in the here and now.
Even at the beginning of last season, there was talk that this could be the year. I mean, and that had certainly been said before. But now when you look back on it, it certainly became very fortuitous. So I'm interested of how you looked at the beginning of the 2016 season, and did it feel different in any way at the beginning?
Well, to be honest, I was working on this book about the Chicago Bears, the 85 Bears, called Monsters. And that book, my love of that team, the 85 Chicago Bears, grew out of what happened with me with the Cubs, which was the 1984 Cubs had this epic playoff collapse that happened when I was 16. I've never fully recovered from it. That team killed me, and the 85 Bears, which won the Super Bowl, brought me back to life. And while I was reporting this book, I went to see the quarterback of the 85 Bears. That was Jim McMahon.
Right.
And I banged on his door in Arizona where he lived, and I pulled open the door. He was wearing a T-shirt that said, got milk, and then underneath it said, got pot. And he had a big thing of Skoal chewing tobacco on his lip, and he pulled me and he said, we're going to win the World Series. I said, what are you talking about? He said, we're going to win the World Series. Theo Epstein's coming. And I think that was the moment that the Cubs, that Tom Ricketts hired Theo Epstein to be the president of the Cubs, the feeling was it was going to be different because of what Theo Epstein had done with another curse in Boston. And he started to change the culture and deal with all the stuff I'm talking about right away. And I really thought by 2015, not 2016, that this team looked completely different than any other Cubs team I had seen. Even the 84 Cubs, they were great, but they were old. They had old players on that team like Ron Say, Larry Boa, guys had been around for years.
Right.
The whole thing about that Theo Epstein realized about the curse is a culture. It spreads from player to player through the generations. And a good solution is get really young players because young people are stupid. They're too stupid to know about history. They're so stupid that they're free. And I felt by 2015 that team looked different. And in 2015 I had this overwhelming desire to see them and be back in the bleachers where I kind of grew up. And I called Sports Illustrated, and I said, this team is different. Let me go just hang out for a week in the bleachers and write about it. And they basically said, well, we can't pay you very much. I said, I don't want money. Just when the Cubs get to the World Series, get me a pass. And it was that pass in 2016 that brought me to all these playoff games.
You say stupid, yes, this talent, but also very promising. There was great promise there in this talent.
Yeah, oh no, they're great. They're the most talented team I've ever seen, and they have this idea almost like when you pick a team when you're a kid, which is when you pick a team, you don't pick the players for the positions, you just pick the best athletes, you know? And that's what's so fascinating about this team. They're just great athletes, and as a result, most of those guys on that team can play any position. And it makes them fun to watch because you never, you know, sometimes guys will change positions within an inning, you know, like Chris Bryant will suddenly move from third base to right field, or Javier Baez will move to shortstop to second base right in the middle of an inning, and it's a little bit like watching a men's league softball game in that way.
So you actually talk about this in the beginning of the book. At the very beginning, the first chapter, and talking about there's no rooting in the press box. You showed up as a Cubs fan, and they said to you, you know, you're here to work, not to cheer on your team. As time went on, though, that I would assume that becomes harder and harder, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you're sitting with a bunch of reporters who are doing a job. I'm not really doing a job. And that was like Game 7 of the World Series, when suddenly Cleveland hits that home run and it's suddenly a tie game and it looked like it was a blowout. I'm, like, utterly destroyed. I mean, it's like just I'm going to die. And the mood around me is somewhat astonishment, like the curse is real, but also that feeling all writers have, which is, oh my God, I have to rewrite my lead, you know? It's like a whole bunch of, like a very long night ahead of me now. And, but you know, the thing is, like, when I, like I said, I went back there, when I hung out a lot in 2001 to figure out why they were losing, nobody cared. There's nobody there. The press box was empty. The team was bad.
Right.
When I went in 2015, I didn't go in the press box. I sat in the bleachers. When I went back in 2016 with the press pass, I just showed up like a Cubs fan, you know? I had my Cubs hat on and everything, and they said, you can't wear that Cubs hat. I'm like, why? Is this, you, well, you got to be neutral. You're the press. I'm like, I've been neutral since I was 10 years old. It's like, well, if you wear that hat, you can't go in the press box. And then I ran into Theo Epstein. I just met him, and I told him about this, and he said, just keep it hidden and keep your hand on your Cubs hat, and you can squeeze it whenever you get nervous. And, you know, there were and apparently somebody told me that during the famous Bartman game, there had been somebody in the press box who went, like, insane. And that was when they became very strict about this rule of absolutely no partisanship in the press box. But, of course, you know, it's impossible as you're watching Game 7 and there's tears streaming down your face to pretend you're not a Cubs fan.
And you're not the only one, of course.
No, I mean, people were – it was a very emotional thing. For, you know, somebody said sports is the most important unimportant thing in the world. And you really saw that for basically a thing that isn't the rise and fall of nations at stake. It was a deeply emotional moment when they finally won.
What do you think it brought the city? What do you think it brought fans? And how do you put that in a bottle? I mean, how do you contain that? So that you don't, sure, you look to next year, you look to the year after, but to always remember what that moment was like.
Well, it brought this incredible sense of conclusion, climax, you know, the end of something. And it was bittersweet and melancholy for me for that reason, because I felt like a whole part of my life had ended. The whole meaning of being a Cubs fan, which was sort of lost causes, and my kingdom is not of this world, and I don't care about winning and losing, and you know, all that ended, and the Cubs accomplished this great thing, but also became a great team, but also a more ordinary team in some way. And I think a lot of people felt that, especially people who grew up with the Cubs never being good. And I don't think you can bottle it. I mean, I think that's what's sad about it. It's, you know, you, now they become a great team, and hopefully they continue to be good and they make a run this year. But to be a Cubs fan is different than what it was 2 years ago.
And, I mean, let's just say they win the World Series this year. It's still special, right?
Yeah, well, yes, this is still the same moment in a way, and this is still the same team. And that will last as long as you have the core group of guys together. And believe me, I'm very aware of the fact that the last time they won had won before last year was 1908, but they won the year before that, they won too. That was 1907, and the year before that was 1906 when they won 116 games and had the best regular season in the history of the sport. So, you know, of course, if you really want the perfect bookend for the Cubs' long journey through the wilderness, it's not just to win the World Series, it's to create a dynasty.
The book is great. It's called The Chicago Cubs, Story of a Curse by Rich Cohen. Rich, thanks very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you, and go Cubs.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Story of a Curse, The Chicago Cubs by Rich Cohen. It's published by FSG. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.